Welcome to the Thinklings Podcast, a conversation where good thoughts help renew the mind with the Word of God. I'm Charlie Carter, and I'm here with Tim Little and Andy Stearns. Let's jump into the conversation. Welcome to the Thinklings Podcast. Thanksgivings Podcast.
Oh, yeah. Gobble, gobble.
Gobble, gobble, gobble. You know, okay, you got your mind. So in my online classes at Faith, you have like the weekly introduction page for like each week of the course and one of the modules. And I have, you know, here's what's coming up this week and here's assignments that are due this week and, you know, any announcements or whatever. On this week, where the students have a full week off for Thanksgiving, I change every word on that page to gobble.
So
gobble 12 or gobble gobble assignments due goes to gobble 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 and gobble gobble gobble.
Man.
It's like it's so like silly.
You're
so
horrendous.
In my on campus students, when they have like the weekly modules, I thought I was being all cool by putting three turkey emojis, Thanksgiving break, three turkey emojis. I was like, man, look at me. Now,
I don't think any college student actually looks at it because there's not class that week. But if they do click it up, every word on the page is just gobble.
That is fantastic.
I think it's hilarious.
That text got gobbled.
Anyway, what are we drinking this morning?
This is Windmill Coffee. So Windmill is in Ames. So have you been to Burgies in Ames?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is he roasts his own beans, or they do. And they rebranded the beans to Windmill. Mm. They're really good. They have a really good, if you're getting old, but you like good coffee and you need decaf in the afternoons, their Periscope decaf is quite good. It's not as good as that stuff that we had where I couldn't tell. But this is the, it's a Brazilian Sitio Baixado. I don't know. It's lemon blossom, brown sugar, and papaya. And it is from Dr. Videa.
I will say from that previous time where we drank decaf and I didn't realize it was decaf. I did have a representative of Brickhouse Coffee Co. message me a little disgusted that I could have drank decaf and not realized it.
So hold on. I would challenge that Brickhouse representative to order some, or maybe I'll order it and bring it and we'll make two cups and you tell me which one's the decaf. Because I'll put two Ethiopian side by side. I bet they can't tell.
Challenge proffered.
Somehow Tim found it, figured it out.
Yeah, I can taste the formaldehyde.
It hurt me.
Did you say the formaldehyde?
Yeah, that's what they you embalm a dead body and you get the decaf out of a coffee with formaldehyde.
Love it.
Great.
All right, so remember a few weeks ago?
What about, or maybe to death?
The plane's on the runway, and we're about to take off here. So back to the runway. Ooh. We're going to do books and business, and then we're going to talk about Thanksgiving stuff. And then we'll have a final meditation in Deuteronomy chapter 12.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's time.
Books and business.
Let's talk about some books.
All right. So this week I'm not reading anything, but I'm writing things. So last week I wrote an article called "Can a Speeding Ticket Change Your Heart?" So this is the fruit of teaching a series on the theology of like Baptist churches. And it came to the issue of individual freedom. We're not talking about separation of church and state yet. We're talking about our individual freedom. And so part of the Reformation and then the separatist after is that the Baptists did not want to coerce anyone to do anything. So Catholic Church, like when Queen Mary comes to power, she wants all the priests who had been able to get married under the Protestant teachings of King Edward before her, her stepbrother, get rid of their wives and then submit to Catholic teaching again in the Anglican Church. And if they didn't, they would get burnt at the stake. So there's a sort of a coercion element there. You're using force. Baptists have historically never done that. You'll find Protestants persecuting and harming Baptists. You'll find Catholics doing it, but you'll never find a Baptist engaging in persecution. It's just antithetical to what we believe. So in teaching through this in Sunday school, something dawned on me that was really helpful for me, that you can't change a belief with force. You can only change a behavior with force. And that's how the law operates, through force. And so we explained that Baptists believe this. And so that's why they don't coerce. And so the illustration was, can a speeding ticket change your heart? And it actually can't. You would stop speeding maybe, but it doesn't mean it's changed your belief about speeding. It's just your belief about, I don't want to get a ticket. So it's just a sanctification thing. In Sunday school, we make the application that what if you're struggling with a habitual sin and you're like, well, I'm going to put some penalties in my life to prevent this. That's not actually addressing your belief about the sin. That's not a heart issue. So Monday morning, I wake up and my blog app on my phone says, your blog is getting good traffic. And I'm like, why is, I put this article up on Friday.
Traffic.
Oh,
speeding ticket.
So Charlie's posted it to a la carte yesterday.
Hey.
Yeah. So I was pretty excited about that, friend of the podcast. There you go, Charlie. But the fun part is I got an email from Moody Radio in Florida from the Kurt and Kate in the Morning show. And they said, hey, we read your article and we really liked it. We'd like to have you on air to talk to you about it. So probably next week, Monday, I think, morning, nice. I'm going to be on some Florida radio station in St. Petersburg and we're going to talk sanctification and speeding tickets. It'll be fun.
Beautiful. So that is awesome.
When we, if that comes out and there's like a link to it, we'll post it later for you, listener. So
that's awesome.
Fun times, eh?
Make sure to mention the Thinklings podcast.
Oh, I'm planning on it. And I'm going to mention our college too. We'll see. We'll see.
Love it.
It'll be a good time.
All right. So for my books and business, actually today, I was going to tell you this later, but I'll tell you now. I actually am off of work today.
What?
Yep. I took work off because
I am
finishing. I really need to finish the prep and recording and updating for Doctrine 2 online for the spring.
Yeah, baby.
I think I have 20 students in there. And so shout out to Dr. Cole, who teaches the live portion. Mm-hmm. He's really excited to not have the remote teaching online anymore.
He does not like
and
remote
so
teaching.
I'm in the final stages of that. And so I have a couple days where I've requested off of work just to kind of make sure I'm wrapping my mind around everything well and getting those videos posted. And so that's really what I've been working on, and what we'll be working on today is just reading a lot about anthropology, hamartiology, and angelology.
Yeah.
And brushing up on those topics. And we know this, when you build a new class, it's just, it's far, far from perfect, the first iteration of it. So
don't tell our listeners.
Shout out to my Genesis students who are so patient.
And so when I build an online class,
Tim just cringed.
I try, and we, what we do here at Faith is we want to make sure that an online from the former online director.
That's right.
That's Ken Rathbun somewhere is smiling.
Yes, and, he is. he just tightened his scarf up and he smiled.
Yeah. And we want the outcomes of a class, whether it's live or it's online, to match. So that means that when you're done taking Doctrine 2 online, or when you're done taking Doctrine 2 in person, you should have the same theological competencies. With theology, what that means is that we've covered the same material, you've been quizzed or examined on the same items. And so really my first goal of this class is to make it match the on-campus class as much as I can. So if you think that there's a lot of creativity in teaching thousand-year-old doctrine when you're kind of teaching it online as opposed to it live, there's actually, in my opinion, there's no creativity at all here. It's content. Like, the content needs to match what we believe, what the Bible teaches. And so really, it's just a lot of preparation of like, do I really understand what I'm saying here in this video? And can I communicate that? And so there's a lot of theological reading. I'll just throw out one fun thing I've been reading. One of the items that Dr. Cole assigns is a reading of an article that was published in BibSac in 1998 by Dr. Myron Houghton.
Yay. Which one is it?
I think it's a reexamination of 1 Corinthians 13.
That's a good one.
Yeah. As we get into pneumatology, and that's like a spiritual gifts sort of discussion with the ceasing of revelatory Holy Spirit gifts there. That passage is a discussion there. And so it's been fun to be with Myron a little bit again. So
that's fun.
But that's something I was reading yesterday and something I'm working on.
So my books of business is Who Owns the Land? An In-Depth Look at the Truth Behind the Middle East Conflict. The author, editor, not authors, the authors are Stanley Ellison and Charles Dyer. This is, I think, the third edition of this book. So it's been updated just here in 2024. Yeah, 91, 2003, and then 2024. Ellison wrote it in 91 and 2003, and then Dyer has updated it. So this is actually, I've been doing this whole Jewish history thing. This book is like a summary of what I've been doing. I started working through it. And I'm like, oh, wow, this is like what I'm going through in the podcast. They basically are walking through a history of Judaism, and they walk through the destruction of the temple in 70 AD. They work through the medieval time period and a fair amount of detail. So then the Zionism and the beginning of the founding of the Jewish state, World War II and the Holocaust. So I didn't know what to expect in a book titled Who Owns the Land. I wasn't expecting a history of Judaism or a history of the Jewish people. That's what this is. So if you're kind of interested in, you know, this Jewish history thing that I've been doing for, I've done a couple of the sessions and I'm going to be doing another one, probably one more, then this would be an excellent resource to walk you through just that Jewish history. Now, the latter three or four chapters have to do with issues concerning who owns the land. So like, to whom does the land really belong? And they're really, I thought, pretty charitable in the book. They talk about how the Palestinians do have a claim to the land. If you think about the land from a international perspective, so what according to international documents can the Jewish people appeal to or the Palestinian people appeal to? And at the end of the day, they basically explain, you know what, both sides have kind of broken the terms of the United Nations. And so, you know, how much do you really appeal to even the original charter of the United Nations back in 48, or even then some of the succeeding charters that followed? So I thought it was interesting. I actually learned some things through that entire conversation. But as Christians, you know, as far as we are concerned, you know, who owns the land, we do go back to like the Abrahamic covenant. The Islamic people, they go back to the Quran. So that's one of the points that Ellison and Dyer bring into the conversation, is really it becomes, you know, who owns the land? You know, what evidence do you proffer to say who owns the land? Do you go to a holy book? Okay, so for us, the Bible, for them, the Quran. Or do you go to an international court? Okay, so then you have the United Nations. How authoritative are any of these things? And then there's another book that I'm going to be reviewing. I don't know if it'll be next week or the week after. I bought it a couple of weeks ago. It's called The Message by Ta-Nehisi Coates. Have you guys heard anything about this one?
No, just the other one.
Yeah, so this one just came out a couple or 3 months ago, and the author was on a CBS, Good News This Morning, whatever their morning thing is. And basically the author got roasted by one of the commentators, and it was a big hubbub. And the commentator, the news reporter that roasted the author, he came under fire because they're like, why did you roast the guy so bad? Because he kind of makes this statement about this book, The Message, Ta-Nehisi Coates. You know, if you strip the cover off of this, and most of it's about the Israeli-Palestinian debate, he's like, you could basically take that section of the book and it would fit right along the in the backpack of an Islamic jihadist. And it was like, whoa. So that's what he accused him of. It's like, you're not being fair with the evidence. Yeah. So I don't watch much of that stuff, but I heard about this one. And so I kind of watched the interview and then I picked up the book and of course, and so then, you know, who owns the land? Well, appeal to a divine book.
Yeah.
Quran or the Bible, appeal to the United Nations or force. And where is he on the whole matter?
I was just going to say, when's force come into this?
Yeah. Okay. He brings force. It's just like, that makes sense. It's the guys who have the power.
Honestly, today, like, I'm not sure how you'd make any other argument in a secularized culture.
Yeah.
Because you can say like this, we have agreement over here with this group of people, but that's just like solidarity.
Right.
That's just like, it's like a group of opinions
rather
than just one person's opinion. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm not going to recommend that book, but I want to read it for myself. So that's why I picked it up. And of course, you know, I'm not going to read it. I'm going to read it.
He did air quotes on the second one and the first one. You know, if you know, you know, listener. If you know, you know.
But Who Owns the Land by Ellison and Dyer, I would recommend. I'd recommend you pick up a copy. I think it was really helpful. And I would give it a 5 on the Thinkling's Goodness scale.
Yeah, that was what I was just about to ask, is if you would give it a ranking.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that, you know, you sifted through some really large historical works about the Jewish people,
uh-huh.
but this was a really nice, succinct summary.
Yes, that's exactly it. Yeah. It's a very succinct summary. You can easily read through it. It reads really well. It's well written.
So for believers, you know, as a companion, you know, not, you know, with the Old Testament, but as a part of understanding the Jewish people, yeah. you would highly recommend the resource. Yeah.
How did they get to the state in which they are in? Well, that history, I think, is helpful.
Yeah. Awesome.
All right. Let's have a conversation about Thanksgiving. This is our fourth Thanksgivings episode. Is that correct? I think it is. Well, whichever it is, I want to start off with a little Thanksgiving trivia. Uh-huh. I knew Charlie would like this.
I love these.
I prepared this because Charlie, he was in a trivia mode.
Why don't you take my thoughts and sentiments into account?
Monologuing. I do monologue, Tim. I do. I don't say horrendous, but I do say glorious. Okay, so I have four questions for you guys to answer. I don't have a prize other than bragging rights. Okay. So are you Googling this, Charlie?
No, I'm trying to see how many Thanksgivings episodes.
If we're on number three or four.
Okay. So, I'm going to ask a question. Maybe he can do two things at once. So, here's your first question. What professional football team has played almost every Thanksgiving day since 1934?
Is this Dallas a buzzer?
Cowboys.
Okay, you're saying Dallas Cowboys?
The Detroit Lions.
I'm like, that was low-hanging fruit. It's totally the Lions. But I didn't expect him to get it, but he had a guess. I'm surprised.
Come on, the Cowboys always play.
They do, but... it's like a big thing for the Detroit Lions.
It's true. They always lose too. So
not anymore.
Not this year anymore.
Yeah. So there's George A. Richards, a former owner, purchased the Portsmouth, Ohio Spartans in 1934 and moved them to Detroit. He rebranded them as the Detroit Lions, and George decided to host a Thanksgiving Day game against the world champion Chicago Bears in 1934 in hopes of attracting fans. The team has always played on Thanksgiving except between 1939 and 1944. Anyone want to guess why?
A big war was going
on. Yeah, World War II. Hey, you got one right. Good job. So the Dallas Cowboys also joined on the Turkey Day tradition in 1966 and have played every Thanksgiving except 75 and 77. So I'm going to give you an honorable mention, Tim. I didn't know about the Cowboys. I only knew about the Lions. All right. So we'll give that first one to Charlie. All right. Question number two. What did President Calvin Coolidge famously receive as a Thanksgiving gift?
I don't know, a turkey.
I was probably going to go with a live turkey.
Okay. This one destroyed me. I was like, what? A live raccoon. So in November of 1926, Vinnie Joyce of Nitta Yuma, Mississippi, sent the 30th president of the United States a live raccoon to be served as Thanksgiving dinner.
What? So, wow, you can eat raccoon.
So yes,
in Mississippi,
you can.
I guess.
So actually, this is a cultural thing.
Okay.
So in southern communities, different ethnicities,
yeah,
that actually was a thing.
Seriously.
So there's another podcast where I listened to, getting back to the NFL, Bo Jackson, who's a famous NFL running back. That's
Bo actually knows football.
A very common black cultural thing is that raccoon would be served
seriously
at holiday meals.
Yep. No way. Okay. So I lost my spot here. So when it arrived,
and by the way, I think if I'm correct, if I'm remembering the podcast, Bo still does it.
Seriously?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Not maybe every year, but he still will cook raccoon.
Well, it's not a bad tradition to bring back into the world, seeing how many crazy stinking raccoons are all over the place.
Hey, there's a YouTube channel called Gates Wildlife up in Canada that humanely removes raccoons from people's houses and they videotape it. It's the cutest thing in the world. You'd hate it, Tim. You'd be like, why are we not shooting all these
things?
So
in New York, my neighbor, he had a live trap and he caught a raccoon because they were getting into his garden. And then he was trying to figure out what to do with it. And basically it was illegal to move them. It was illegal to get rid of him. He's like, what do I do with this?
Seriously?
Yeah. And he was like a Cornell University professor. So he's like very, you know, green and save the animals and whatever else. And they basically said, you have to shoot it or you have to drown it.
No,
and so
way.
He had a pond down behind his house. So he threw the live trap into the pond and drowned the raccoon.
Oh my word. That is.
And then my dad told him he'd help him out and he'd go over and shoot the things. It's like a raccoon trapped in a live trap. Bang.
This podcast just went to a very dark place. Well, do you want to know
how... We have a lot of hatred for raccoons in New York.
Well, do you want to know how Calvin Coolidge responded to this?
Oh, let's hear it.
He became so smitten with the furry animal that he pardoned it and adopted it as a pet, and he named it Rebecca.
That's horrendous.
Rebecca.
That is like a terrible story.
Rebecca the raccoon. I don't know. I thought that. It was pretty cool. I like that. All right. Ready? Question number three. What food did the colonists and Native Americans not have at the first Thanksgiving? So think of all the accoutrements on your plate at Thanksgiving dinner. Which one of those did the colonists and the natives not have on the very first Thanksgiving? Okay.
Are we going for like a staple?
No clarification.
Cranberry jelly.
I do think it's probably possible that they didn't have turkey or corn.
Okay. Do you want to? I need a final answer before we go forward.
I'll go with turkey.
You're correct.
Ooh.
Well done. It's kind of the question almost leads you to like it's the turkey, right? Okay. So most of us enjoy turkey, but we don't actually know when it was on the menu. Like we don't know if it was on the menu in 1621. But they did have lobster, seal, and swan. Those were some things they ate at the earliest Thanksgiving. And then
makes sense.
The Wampanoag tribe also reportedly brought 5 deer to the celebration. So if you like venison, you're actually working out well. All right, last question. What president refused to declare Thanksgiving a holiday?
Can you give us a like any type of a hint?
No.
On timing?
It would be the earliest. It's not a recent president. It's a historic, you could probably consider this one of the founding fathers. So we're pretty early.
I mean, my first thought, just because he's super crazy, would have been Andrew Jackson.
Okay.
But that's not early enough. I'll go George Washington.
Okay.
You wanted the president?
Mm-hmm.
Which president? Adams.
Okay, you're both wrong. You are in the founders, though. It's actually Thomas Jefferson.
Oh.
Now, this is going to lead into my main content of the article or of the podcast. President, presidents originally had to declare Thanksgiving a holiday every single year up until Lincoln made it a national holiday during his tenure. However, Thomas Jefferson refused to recognize the event because he believes so firmly in what?
I don't know.
The separation of church and state.
So
isn't that crazy? Since Thanksgiving involved prayer and reflection, he thought designating it a national holiday would violate the First Amendment. He also thought it was better suited as a state holiday, not a federal one.
That sounds fishy to me. I didn't know he was that. Anyway, interesting.
You didn't know Jefferson's the guy who cut open his Bible?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. No, he was very much, I know people say he's a deist, but I think he was actually functionally an atheist and wanted no religion. Personally, that's what I think.
We don't have to get into that.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Well, I think there's a little bit of like reading our own cultural postmodern terminology backwards. So I do think an atheist then would have still had quite a bit different of a desire for virtue than modern atheists.
True.
So qualitatively, yeah. I would say that an atheist 100 years ago is very different than an atheist, especially our founding fathers.
Yeah.
We're now still devoid without the help of God, but I think they would have appeared and communicated quite a bit differently. But, you know, there's a lot of those guys that were pretty risque. So,
that was
great dudes.
That one's tricky because when we did that, Making of an Atheist episode way back in season 2, one of the books that the guy used as research was he did a study on the most prominent atheists for all these years. Now I think if I'm correct, Jefferson's a deist, so he's not in that camp, but they were all like really, really wicked and immoral. I don't know about Jefferson, but if you're a deist, you're sort of capitulating a little bit to Enlightenment rationalism. He really liked rationality, that he wanted reason to rule. But at the same time, you're kind of holding on to some of the religion. So I think you're right. There's probably like a moralism that he held on to. You got
just it? To qualify. This yes. would be Thanksgiving's 5.
Okay, I wondered if it was
2022, 21, 22, 23.
There we go.
24. I did verify.
Because we're season 9.
And it does seem somewhere that I called it Thanksgivings. So G-I-V-I-L-I-N-G-S. But most of the time it's Thanksgivings.
Okay.
So we have a textual issue
you
there
figured
that
we'll, it out.
We'll work out.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was transposition or whatever that mm-hmm. is. Yeah. Okay. So this so my point here is that I looking into this, I actually think so the very first season, if you go back to Thanksgiving's 1, we talk about Christian about Thanksgiving being a decidedly Christian virtue, Thanksgiving. And so looking into this, I didn't realize this, but I think Thanksgiving is actually a very Christian holiday. And so it's probably old news to most people, but here's a couple of points. So point number one, when you celebrate Thanksgiving, just remember it's so Christian that Thomas Jefferson felt uncomfortable making it a national holiday because he wanted it to be separate from the government of the day. I think it's a pretty good thing. So there's an article by Thomas Kidd. Thomas Kidd is a historian. He teaches at Baylor. And also at Midwestern, he has a PhD from Notre Dame, and he has a little article in the Imaginative Conservative in 2012 called The Religious Roots of Thanksgiving. And so I'm just going to annotate a little bit of this article for you, but if you're interested in it, you should go back and look at it. So the religious roots of Thanksgiving speak to the essence of America. And so he walks through and he says that when Plymouth Colony had started off, they weren't the first people to settle North America. There were other people, but the permanent English colonists did show up in early 1600s. And the first Thanksgiving, as best as we can tell, is in 1621. And it was a meal that took place with the natives in the area. So the Native Americans. modern Thanksgiving has become largely non-religious. I would say that I think it's Turkey Day. It's football. I didn't know it was a religious holiday. I didn't know it had any religious overtones. I'd heard about the colonists coming and they were Christians and all that and they wanted to worship, but I didn't hear anything about that. So today we focus more on food and family and football rather than thanking God. But if you look back at the records of the first one, the Pilgrim's Experience was actually much more Christian than that. It was a Christian thing. All right. So, on the Mayflower, so what's the Mayflower is the ship that they took over. When they got off, remember how they had to sign that document, the Mayflower Compact. So Kidd pulls up, he says, hey, there's actually some wording in here. So this is part of the wording from the compact. It says, having undertaken for the glory of God and the advancement of the Christian faith and the honor of our king and country, a voyage to plant the first colony in the northern parts of Virginia, do by these presents solemnly and mutually in the presence of God and one another, covenant and combine ourselves together into a civil body politic for a better order and preservation. Now, I come out of the public school system, and I was always told that America is not a religious country. It never was a religious country, and it wasn't started as a religious country. Okay. And I hear that, and I'm like, oh, from the beginning, Christianity really is involved in our country, which kind of sorts out some other things. So the colonists came here for religious purposes. He just shows that. The first records of the first Thanksgiving, there's not a lot. We do know that they held a 3-day celebration. So it was a 3-day event. Now, maybe we need to impose that. Like, maybe it's not just Thursday, but it's also Wednesday and Tuesday. Because we could go Friday and Saturday, but we kind of already get those off. So make it a whole week.
You're horrendous.
I am horrendous, but I'm arguing for time off, too.
Maybe that's some official business we could cover on a future episode.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. And we can get more horrendouses from Tim.
Yep.
So they celebrated it, and they were allied with a group of Indians in the area. And part of what they wanted to do is they wanted to observe that they'd had a really good harvest. And so early on, if you had a bad harvest, it was really like the first winter, like more than half of these people died. And so when they had this celebration, they were very thankful because they had a really good harvest. that first year, half the people had died, and they had a great, they had lots of stores of foods. And so they got together and they had this Thanksgiving holiday. Now, if you jump ahead to Washington's era, the Continental Congress and the American presidents, beginning with George Washington, regularly began proclaiming a day of Thanksgiving. Now, understand, here's the argument. When you're thankful, it's hard to be abstractly thankful. You are thankful for something, and the part we don't often think of is we're thankful to something or someone. And so here, if you look at the wording from the very beginning, the people who are saying we are thankful, they're saying they're thankful to God. It's really shocking. So proclaimed days of Thanksgiving in 1789, the first year of his presidency, Washington declared that the last Thursday of November would be a day of public thanksgiving and prayer to be observed by acknowledging with grateful hearts the many signal favors of Almighty God. That's his direct quote. Now, I would say that's probably the best thing that happened in 1789 on our planet, okay? The only heads rolling here would have maybe been deer or turkey heads, okay?
Nice.
Thank you. Thank you. So he was very clear that when he proclaimed the day of Thanksgiving, it was to Almighty God. Now, what's the counter to that? Well, maybe it was the deist God. I would doubt that.
Doesn't make sense. It's illogical because God's gone.
Yeah. And I would say that the Puritans who came over, they were clearly worshiping the God of the Bible. So I would say that's it. So it became an annual holiday, but not until the Civil War era. The Congress made the fourth Thursday the official national holiday in December 41. And then in December of 1941, they made it an official holiday right before before World War II. Okay, so when you look at this, I just want to point out that Washington's words talk about Christianity and praising the God. Okay. And then you have the Mayflower Compact, which is religious in tone. So the people at the time are being religious and the religion is Christianity. And then you have Thomas Jefferson, who doesn't want to make it a national holiday because it's too close to Christianity. So short, sweet, that's it. Thanksgiving is born out of Christian thought, thankful for the Christian God, for the provisions the Christian God gives. It's very Christian. Now, how do we lose the Christianity in it? I don't know. That'd be another total study to do, but
moral relativism.
It could be. I think it's probably moral relativism. It's probably just enjoying the benefits of it and not talking about it. It might be people who grew up doing Thanksgiving and now they don't believe, but they still want to do Turkey Day.
You know, if I was really pushed on the issue, I would say that's because they started celebrating Thanksgiving to the expense of Boxing Day.
So,
and
they're so horrendous.
I knew it.
They should have read good books.
I could see
every
twinkle.
December 26th. And had they done
that's right,
we would have remained Christian in our Thanksgiving.
Listeners, I could see in Charlie's eye. You wouldn't have known it from his face. And then I realized he forgot to mention Boxing Day, and this is his way of
doing
it.
We want to keep mentioning Boxing Day, so I wanted to.
Yeah, it's so horrendous.
But I'd be thankful for a
it
book.
It is horrendous, but isn't it wonderful?
I would be thankful for a book, Charlie, and I think I would be thankful to you and to the Lord for providing books. I do think so.
That's great language to put into our Boxing Compact.
It is. Anyway. Ooh, we should make a Boxing Compact.
Oh, brother.
But all this, let me tie this up. So, listener, I think when you celebrate Thanksgiving as a Christian, think about all the thankful commands in the Bible. This really does line up. It really does line up with Christianity. So even if it doesn't mean that to everyone today, you should be grateful to God on Thanksgiving.
Let's have a final meditation from God's Word. I'm going to take us to Deuteronomy chapter 12. You guys can go ahead and turn there. Deuteronomy chapter 12. Deuteronomy 12 is the beginning of the second section of Deuteronomy. In fact, Deuteronomy 12:1 states, "These are the statutes and judgments which you shall be careful to observe in the land which the Lord God of your fathers is giving you to possess all the days that you live on the earth." So this beginning of this new section starts the specific stipulations of the law, so 12:1 through 26:15. Within these specific stipulations of the law, you have some exhortations and rules as well. I'm going to be jumping into verse 15. What's going on is the text, he's talking about a change. The children of Israel should expect a change. When we think through the progress of Revelation, a lot of times people think Old Testament, New Testament. Well, within the Old Testament itself, there were changes that took place. One of those changes concerned the place where the Lord would put his name, and thus then the place where the Lord would put his name is the place where the children of Israel were to gather, they were to offer their sacrifices there. That's Jerusalem. So if you think through, before Jerusalem was the place where the Lord had placed his name, they would offer sacrifices at various high places in various locations throughout the land of Israel. So this text is expecting and looking forward to that change. And it concerns the offering of sacrifices. You understand whenever they're sacrificing an animal to the Lord, there's also meat from the animal that the people are to enjoy. And so as you think through, well, God wants us to actually enjoy the good things that he gives us, this text speaks to that point. So I'm going to jump in now to verse 15. You may slaughter and eat meat within all your gates, whatever your heart desires, according to the blessing of the Lord your God, which he has given you. The unclean and the clean may eat of it, of the gazelle and the deer alike. What do you guys think of that verse?
Sounds good.
Eat meat.
So it says you can eat unclean and clean meat.
I don't think it's the unclean meat. It's like whether you are all people. All people. So ceremonially unclean, you can still eat.
Okay.
Of it.
Yeah. Okay. So I don't know. I'm not sure what you're looking for.
That's it. It's kind of clear. What does God want you to do? Well, whatever your heart desires, you can enjoy that meat. Okay, let's keep going. So there's some specific laws. I'm going to get to something. I'm going to read through the whole text, though. Verse 16, only you shall not eat the blood. You shall pour it on the earth like water. You may not eat within your gates the tithe of your grain or your new wine or your oil or of the firstborn of your herd, of your flock, or of any of your offerings which you vow, of your freewill offerings or of the heave offering of your hand. But you must eat them before the Lord your God in the place which the Lord your God chooses, you and your son and your daughter and your male servant, your female servant, and the Levite who is within your gates. And you shall rejoice before the Lord your God in all to which you put your hands. Take heed to yourself that you do not forsake the Levite as long as you live in your land. What's up with that last verse and that final exhortation?
Well, didn't the Levite, they had no land.
Right.
They were servants, and so they were sort of dependent on other people in the community, right?
They were. Okay, so this text does speak about enjoying the good blessings that God gives you, but not to the expense of depriving those whom God has put in the community. And one of those would have been the Levites. And we could go to other texts, and the person was supposed to be generous to the poor and to the widow and to the orphan and so on and so forth. The Levite is kind of like the educator of the city, the educational system. The educational system transmitted through the Levites. They were kind of the servants in the cities that were doing these things. And so whose responsibility was it to provide for the Levites?
The town,
the people. And so what's the exhortation? Don't forget them. You need to provide and let them enjoy the good blessing as well. So now in verse 20, when the Lord your God enlarges your border as he has promised you, and you say, Charlie, you want to read that next line?
Meat's back on the menu. I'm sorry. I will eat meat.
Is that what you meant, Tim? Is you need to joke? Okay. I was just wondering.
Let me eat meat. Because you long to eat meat, you may eat as much meat as your heart desires. That's kind of an interesting exhortation and command within the Deuteronomic law. Most of the time, the Deuteronomic law has this aura, has this feel. It has this perception, oh, God's making my life miserable, saying I can't do this or I can't do that.
Prohibition.
Don't do this and don't do that. But what does God actually want you to do?
Be happy. Enjoy the land.
Enjoy the land. Enjoy the good things that God's given. And as we think through, Thanksgiving, what does God want you to do? Enjoy it. Take a look around the table. Take a look at what God's blessed you, whether it's little or whether it's much, okay? Take delight in the blessing that God has given you. Say thank you. Thank him for the good blessings that he's given you, whatever it might be. I know sometimes the holidays can be a difficult time for certain people, and it brings back memories that may be somewhat painful. But even in the midst of pain, there's goodness. Enjoy that goodness today.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Thinklings Podcast. We would love to hear from you. If you have any feedback, suggestions, or potential topics that you'd like us to discuss, you can contact us through our email, thinklingspodcast@gmail.com. Remember, don't let this conversation end with this podcast. Read good books, talk about them with your friends, and always continue to cultivate your mind. See you next time on the Thinklings Podcast.